Morning, everyone. I have a... do we have feedback, sorry? Okay. So we have a question before we begin. I think the question's on the next slide. What is the best thing about Christmas? So what is the thing about Christmas that you are most looking forward to this year, most excited about? Go on, Jake. No school. Is anyone excited about no school? I think there might be a few teachers who are also excited about no school. Anything else? Go on, Ben. Food, yes. Here's the great debate. So what do you have Boxing Day? Pardon, sorry? The buffet. There's a buffet. Oh, okay. So we usually get the leftovers for Christmas from Christmas Day and turn it into a curry. So we call it leftover curry. Really my favourite meal of the year. Anything else? Oh, I see a few Irwins with hands up. Meeting family. There we go. Anything else? So meeting relatives, we don't get to see that often. So the opportunity to get to see relatives. Do we have anything from the band? Any highlights for Christmas? Christmas films. Do you have a favourite Christmas film? Love Actually. Ah. Who thinks Love Actually is the best film ever? Good thing that George isn't here. He'd have a few words with you. Yes. So there's a number of things that we enjoy most about Christmas. But there tends to be that some people enjoy some things about Christmas more than others. So if we go to the next slide, I just have a question. What if you're a nine-year-old child? So if you're a nine-year-old child, what do you think is the most exciting thing about Christmas? So what's the most exciting thing for nine-year-old children, you reckon, about Christmas? Would it probably be the presents? Yeah. The opportunity to see Santa, that kind of thing. So there are all of these different exciting things if you're a child. Okay, and it tends to be the presents are exciting. What if you're a parent? So if you're a parent, what is the most exciting thing about Christmas generally? Do we have any parents here? Oh, go on.
Grandchildren.
Grandchildren. So the opportunity to see family. Yes, so the ability to see family. Maybe the ability to have some time off work and sort of collapse for a bit and recuperate, ready for the new year. So there are all of these reasons why as a parent you might enjoy Christmas more. What if you're a shop owner? So if you're a shop owner, what do you think is the most exciting thing about Christmas? Everyone buying your food. So when I was working in retail, the December month, we generally had twice as much turnover than any other month. So it can be very exciting if you're a shop owner, but also very exhausting. So there are these different reasons why you might be excited about Christmas, depending on who you are. But here's the question, if we get to the next slide. What happens when Christmas doesn't meet our expectations? So what happens if you're the nine-year-old child when you don't get that Christmas present you want? What happens when, as the parent, actually family life is incredibly difficult? When you have that uncle and that auntie who just can't get on? Or what happens if you look back in the month of December at a year that's been fairly miserable? Or a Christmas that looks to be fairly miserable? What happens in those situations? Let me put it in another way if we go to the next slide. What's the good news when Christmas doesn't feel quite as magical as it should? When those promises that Hollywood sells us and the adverts sell us for the perfect Christmas, the magical Christmas, when they don't turn out to be true, when actually Christmas feels fairly awful. What's the good news in that instance? Now, hopefully, as we look at Isaiah 9, we're going to see what the good news is when Christmas doesn't feel good. What is the good news for those who come to Christmas feeling broken? Should we have the reading next?
Isaiah chapter 9, from verses 1 to 7. On page 693. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled
the
land of Natalie. But in the future, he will honour Galilee of the Gentiles.
Just a minute, Graham.
On the Jordan. People walking in darkness.
I think our vicar is not there today.
And those living in the land of the shadow of death, the light has dawned. You have enlarged the nations and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoiced at the harvest, as men rejoiced when dividing the plunder.
There's Wendy, she's looking well.
As in the days of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them. The bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace.
That's very remiss of the vicar.
Isn't it, Josh?
It's Christmas Eve.
I know.
There will be no end.
I don't think he is.
He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever.
We're very familiar with. It's a passage that's part of the Nine Lessons and Carols. But there's a subtle difference. Usually, when we hear that passage, what's the first verse we hear?
Is this a Will, Graham?
Is it verse one?
It's like Will.
Usually verse two, the first one we do. So verse two, that great line of the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. It's a great point to start with in Christmas, light. Verse 1 talking of there will be no more gloom for those who are in distress. It doesn't feel as Christmassy, talking of gloom, talking of distress. You'd rather talk about light. And yet, that is how Isaiah starts. But in order to understand what Isaiah is getting at, in order to understand who is in gloom, we need to do a bit of time travelling. And in order to do this time travelling, we need to ask a question. What testament do we think Isaiah is written in? Is it in the Old Testament? The Old Testament, yes, James! So it's written in the days of the Old Testament. It's written in the days before Jesus. And in Isaiah's time, there were two regions in Israel. One of them was known as Zebulun, which you can see on that lower arrow. And one of them's in Naphtali, which you can see in that upper arrow. Now, a few more questions about the geography. Is it in the south of Israel, judging from that map, or the north, those two regions? The north, yes! So it's not down there in Judah, it's up there in Zebulun and Naphtali, the place known as the Northern Kingdom. Another question, you see just above that lower arrow there, there's a little lake, isn't there? Can anyone tell me the name of that lake? Lake Galilee, yes. So Lake Galilee is often associated with the land of Zebulun and Naphtali. That's going to be massively important for us to understand this verse. So Zebulun and Naphtali, the land around Lake Galilee. And yet these people are going to be the people who are in gloom, as we're going to see in the next section, the next slide. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. So God has humbled those lands. How, in the Old Testament, how does God usually humble a land when he's angry with a land or he wants to show that he's frustrated with a land? What's one of the ways he does it? Invasion. Yes, Jacob. So often in the Old Testament, when there's this experience of God needs to show judgment to the land, there's an invasion. And that's exactly what happened to Zebulun and Naphtali. It's the Assyrians. The Assyrians attack from the north. And as they attack Israel, which are two of the lands that are first and worst hit by that invasion? It's Zebulun and it's Naphtali. So when we hear of this gloom, it isn't just any gloom. It's a very terrible gloom. It's the gloom of being invaded by a foreign power. It's the gloom of war. This isn't an easy Christmas story. This is good news coming to people who are seriously in distress. And yet, there's a blessing that's going to come to the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, as we're going to see in the next verse. But in the future, he will honour Galilee of the Gentiles by the way of the sea along the Jordan. Now, we see Galilee a little bit in the New Testament. Where do we hear the word Galilee most often in the New Testament? Or do we associated it with most?
Fishermen!
What kind of fishermen?
Galilean
fishermen, that's true. Okay, but Galilean fishermen who followed the ministry of Jesus. And that is because, if we go to the next slide, the ministry of Jesus, most of it occurred within that land. The land that experienced invasion. The land that experienced oppression by a foreign power. And it's that same land that is blessed with the ministry of Jesus. And even there in the Old Testament, Isaiah is already saying a blessing is going to come to an oppressed people. The oppressed people of Zebulun and Naphtali. How is that going to be the case? It's going to be the case because Jesus is going to have his earthly ministry there. We often skip by that single verse, verse 1. We often just want to talk immediately about the light rather than the gloom. And yet it's to the people who are in gloom, to the people who are in distress, that the good news of Jesus comes on Christmas, no matter how joyous the year has been. And therefore, with joy, we're going to sing the next song, which is Silent Night. Okay, so we talk a lot about light in this passage. Now, light is something that we have this idea of what it is. We know what light is, but it's very difficult to define unless you're a scientist. Do we have anyone who's willing to give us a definition of what light is? So I checked Wikipedia. Wikipedia says that light is an electromagnetic radiation that can be perceived by the human eye. No idea what that means, but I know what light is. And I can tell you how I know what light is, because I have some here. So this is a source of light. The way I know it's a source of light is if I turn it on here, all of a sudden, it lights up. So I might not be able to define what light is, but I know what it is when I see it. This is light. A few days ago, we had the winter solstice. Does anyone know what the winter solstice is? Darkest day of the year. It's the darkest day of the year. So it's a year when we'll be turning these on the earliest, won't we? We'll have most use of this on the 21st of December, when it's the darkest day of the year. Now, would you, on a really, really bright midsummer's day, when you're standing out in the park and the sun is blazing out without a cloud in the sky, would you turn one of these on? No. And you wouldn't turn one of these on because you don't need light when there's already light. When do you need light? When it's dark. So the light needs to go to where the darkness is. That's why it is the people who are living in darkness who have seen a great light. What does that mean for us for Christmas? It means that even when you're living in that deep darkness, even when it feels like Christmas can never be good, there is a hope for you, because no matter whether you're living a happy year or a sad year, a light year or a dark year, there is a light that comes to you. But it's a light we all need, because all of us are living in darkness. It's not that I'm living in darkness, but you're not, so I need Jesus, but you don't. We're all living in darkness, and we're going to see that. But because we're all living in darkness, we all have this great gift, which is light. And we're told in the next slide what that light might be. We're told, for to us a child is born, to us son is given. Now, can anyone tell me who that child is? Jesus, yes. So it sounds quite obvious to us, but the child who is born, the son that is given, is Jesus. And that is the light that comes to dark places. And we're not only told that Jesus is the light, we're given a load of titles that Jesus has. We're told in the next slide that he's going to be a few things. Can anyone tell me what that fourth thing is? Prince of Peace. And just for giving that, Jacob, I'm going to ask something of you. Can you stand where you are right there, if you want to? And do you want to hold that right up? There we go. So we're told he's the Prince of Peace. What else are we told? One thing. The Mighty God. Do you have another one, George? Pardon? Wonderful Counselor. You're absolutely right, though, George. He is a saviour. But I'm going to give you these. He's a wonderful counsellor. And he's a mighty God. So do you want to have Mighty God, Thomas? And do you want to have Wonderful Counselor? And can you both stand up? And hold it as high as you can. Okay. There's one more thing we have on that list. Anyone want to take it? Anyone want to tell me what it is? Oh, there we go, Simon. Thank you. What is it?
Everlasting
Father. Do you want to hold that right up? So what's the list again? It's Wonderful Counselor. So someone who is greatly wise. We often think of a counselor as kind of like someone who will deal with mental health stuff these days. But within the context of the time, a wonderful counselor is someone who is incredibly wise. So it's saying someone who is wonderfully wise. We're also told that the new child's going to be Mighty God. Now that isn't something you say about any old king. It would have to be someone who's going to be groundbreaking, who'll change the world, who is God himself. We're told he's going to be the everlasting Father, and we're told that he's going to be the Prince of Peace. He's going to bring peace. Thank you, everyone. We're not only told what he is, those are his titles, we're also told what he's going to do in the next slide. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. But this is the problem. So we read of that, of the increase of his peace, there will be no end. Do we live in a world where there's peace at the moment? Yeah. How? Can anyone give me any reasons why we're not living in a world of peace? There's war. So there's a big war in Ukraine right now, isn't there? And there's also a war going on in Gaza. I believe there's still a war going on in Yemen for ages now. But there's wars in the world. And there are wars that go in and out of the news, but even when they go out of the news, they're still there. Let's think a bit closer to home. So there's not just wars out there, but there's also strife. Can anyone think of any examples of that? Yeah, so industrial strife, isn't there? So strife between employers and employees that can involve industrial action, strikes, that kind of thing. Political distress, so people fighting over where the country should go, but also family strife. So, and that becomes especially acute in Christmas, doesn't it? When we see the strife of the family, when people come together, and it can sometimes be a bit awkward. So there are all of these different ways where we're not living in a world of peace. So then the question is, what is the passage talking about? Well, the good news is that there is peace on offer that Jesus is already giving. But it's not a worldwide peace, although Jesus will bring that, and we're going to talk about that later. But even today, the peace is peace with God. So, as I was saying before, all of us are living in darkness, and the darkness is sin. It's the things that we do that keep us from God and having a relationship with God. But it's because Jesus came into the world, and only because Jesus came into the world, to live the perfect life and die the death of a sinner, that we can have peace with God. We can have it now, and we can have it because of the gift that came on Christmas Day. But that's not the only peace that Jesus will offer. Jesus will offer us complete peace, not only peace with God, but peace with neighbour. And we can see that as we go on in the passage. We're told a few other things, if we go on. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom. Anyone here whose name is Dave? We have no Dave here. I've got Dave as a middle name. I'm going to keep it. Okay, so, do you have a throne? There's many Davids out there. Okay, not many of them have thrones. Even the ones who do have thrones, it's probably not the one they're talking about. Who's David here? Which David are they talking about? The one God made a promise to. Yes, so God made a promise to David, and it's King David, isn't it? So I often think with King David, the way that people in the Old Testament thought of King David is a bit like King Arthur. So this idea of like the ideal king, the king that we aspire to be. King David is that great king that Jesus is going to be like. And because he's going to be like that great king, we're told in the next slide what he's going to be like, with justice and righteousness. This is how Jesus is going to reign. He's going to reign with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. So this is the reign that Jesus is going to bring, the reign that he already brings in a sense, but when he comes again, he will bring that reign of justice and righteousness. And then his reign of peace will not only be peace with God, it will be peace on the earth between one another. And there will be no war, there will be no strife, and there will be no awkward Christmases, because Jesus will reign. How do we know this is the case? We have confidence that this is the case. We're told at the very end. It's not just me who's telling you this. It's not just me who's going to guarantee you this. If it was just me, you can't really trust it, because I don't have that ability to bring peace. But it's the zeal of the Lord Almighty who will accomplish this. And with the knowledge of the joy of Christmas, and it's a joy that comes to those who are struggling over Christmas. Whether you're having an easy Christmas, you're really looking forward to Christmas, or you're thinking this Christmas is already shaping up to be a terrible Christmas, this joy comes to you. Peace with one another in the end, but today, peace with God. And with that in mind, as we have the opportunity of peace with God, we're going to pray to our God and Father, as we're led in a time of prayer.